For Pennsylvania hunters and conservationists, our roots run deep. The episodes we bring to you on the Pennsylvania Game Commission's podcast, Call of the Outdoors, will take a deep dive into exposing the incredible work being done by agency staff and partners, including statewide habitat projects, the science behind wildlife management, and what drives agency decisions. The Pennsylvania Game Commission's mission is twofold: to manage and protect wildlife and their habitats for not only current but future generations, and to promote hunting and trapping in the Keystone State.
Hello and welcome to Call of the Outdoors, the Pennsylvania Game Commission's podcast, and really excited about today. Obviously, hunting season is here, and if you're a hunter in Pennsylvania, you know what I'm feeling right now. The adrenaline's pumping. But to my left, very special guest. You're right. He comes from the northeast region of Pennsylvania, in that northeast corner, Aaron Morrow. He is our information education supervisor up there in the northeast. Thank you, Aaron. And from the other corner of the state, to my right, your left, we have Mario Altieri. And Mario is a state game warden in the northwest region. So we've kind of got the whole state represented, really. I mean, yeah. You know, from both corners, and lots of different things happening up there. Gentlemen, thank you. And I'm going to kick it over real quick, Aaron, to you. And just a Cliff Notes version of how you're sitting here today and in the position and job that you're in.
Well, I like to say that I flipped a coin and it landed on the right side. But
heads or tails?
It landed on heads.
I got you.
That's what I called. But yeah, so I was a member of the 29th class of Ross Leffler School of Conservation. We classed up in 2012, ultimately graduated in early 2013. And from there, I was assigned to the Northeast region. Started my career in Lackawanna County, spent a number of years in Lackawanna County, transferred to Wyoming County, which is also in the Northeast region, just right next door to Lackawanna. From there, and really the last year has been kind of a whirlwind. From Wyoming County, I spent about 2 years. I was promoted to the sergeant position for the game warden group supervisor. I was in that role for a short period, maybe 6 to 7 months. Then I was ultimately promoted to the regional office.
Awesome.
So it's been a ride.
But a hunter your whole life?
Whole life. From the time I could walk, I was with my father in the woods. And then when I turned 12, I could legally get my license and hunt. And
finally, somebody old that understands what I had to go through.
Been an addict ever since.
Yeah, and you're a Dauphin County boy too, right?
So yeah, originally just north of Harrisburg, a small town, Millersburg, Pennsylvania, that sits on the Susquehanna River.
Pretty place.
It is, and it's a great hunting culture up there, and that's what got me, you know, introduced to hunting in general.
So as a game warden, is it something that you always wanted to do? I mean, since a young age, or how did that come about?
Becoming a game warden? Mm-hmm.
Like, was it a dream, desire, luck? Or?
So, no, it's, you know, I always hunted. Didn't have a lot of interaction with game wardens when I was a kid. I think one or two times I was at a program. And, it was, I spent a few years in the military and was going to school. And I just happened to catch in a newspaper that the Game Commission was testing. And decided to throw my name in the hat. And
here you are.
12 years later,
awesome.
Northeast Pennsylvania.
Nice. Well, thank you for your service to our country as Absolutely. Well. Kicking it over to you, because Mario, you what class were did you graduate?
So I graduated with the 33rd class.
Oh wow!
So back in 2022. So last
not too long ago.
Yeah, not too long ago.
Awesome.
No, it feels like a long time. How I wound up here is a little different. Grew up in just outside of Pittsburgh, McKeesport. And then when I graduated high school, I went to college at Slippery Rock. And then ever since then, I've stayed in the Northwest, moved around in some different avenues in law enforcement, a couple different agencies. And then, which is all I ever wanted to do, was be in law enforcement, help people, you know. And then all of a sudden, COVID hit. And then I realized that I didn't like being stuck in an office. I still love law enforcement, still loved interacting with the public. But just really wasn't going anywhere. If this was going to be the reality, you know, trying to do investigations from, you know, my living room, from my computer. And then I saw, actually knew someone that was going through the training school pipeline. And Aaron, like you, I really didn't have a lot of interactions with game wardens growing up. Also like you, and like most of us that are in this position, grew up hunting and fishing. But, you know, in Pittsburgh, you know, I wasn't really exposed to the big woods hunting.
So you are an Eagles fan, right?
Absolutely not. But, you know, so I put in for it, saw the opportunity to come up for the 33rd class, and I figured, you know, I'm going to give it a shot. Natural resource policing, natural resource protection. You know, I believe in everything we stand for, but I'm gonna do it. And I tell you, the second week in the academy, I could actually tell you the exact circumstance, but I won't. It was a situation where I had a little extra attention from the training school staff, and I said, you know what, this just, weirdly enough, this just clicks. You know, the camaraderie, what we are, you know, the statement of protect that which cannot protect itself, like finally found the puzzle piece that clicked. You know, again, wanted to be in this career field, but didn't know exactly where. So that's the long and short of awesome. how I wound up here.
That's pretty cool. And that's a lot of folks sometimes don't realize what our officers out there in the field really have to go through and what their job is. Your job is so multi-pronged that it's harder. I mean, there's way more than just trying to find somebody that's doing something wrong. I mean, in all honesty, the people that do wrong out there, that is your job because you're trying to protect wildlife. Mm-hmm. But there's way more to it. And that's kind of what we want to talk about today. You know, we're going to talk about a lot of things. Feel free to open up. You know, one of the things that we want to talk about is safety, which is the number one most important thing. We want all hunters to go out there and enjoy it. We want to be safe, and we're going to talk about, you know, safety and just things that people can do, and maybe some citations that y'all see out there, or some people doing things that might not be right that you know that they should know about. You know, we have a lot of citations that are written every year for the same things that are just people don't pay attention to that law. Mm-hmm. And the law that we have to enforce. But let's talk about safety. In 2022, Pennsylvania had 14 hunting-related shooting incidents, and that's the lowest number of those accidents since 1915. And that's saying a ton about hunter education and the information that's out there. And part of your job out there is hunter education.
Right. So I think that, like you stated, that's a testament to our curriculum and the hunter trapper education courses. That's a testament to our volunteer instructors who take time out of their day, who go, you know, above and beyond and teaching these young students, these young men and women, you know, safety at this class. You know, the hunter education class, you know, I tell my students, we're not going to teach you how to be a good hunter. We're not going to teach you how to be a good trapper, but we're going to teach you to be ethical, and we're going to teach you to be safe. And that's what we want to see when we're in the field. Safety is paramount, you know, because when you're hunting, you're walking around with a live firearm. It's got a round in the chamber, you know, knowing where that muzzle is at all times, you know, basic weapons handling safety rules, right? So treating every weapon as if it were loaded, you know, never point a weapon or a firearm at anything you don't intend to shoot. Keeping your finger straightened off the trigger and keeping your weapon on safe until you're ready to fire. Mm-hmm. Knowing your target, what lies beyond it. All of these aspects are stressed at the, you know, 8-hour course, a day-long course, over and over in multiple different aspects. So it's, I think that has a lot to do with it, and it's massive.
And when I hear you say that, I hear my dad. Yeah. When I'm a young man talking to me, is like, watch which way your barrel's pointed. Right. And, you know, don't do this and don't do it. And that's what, you know, in today's world. And I'm going to kick it over to you, Mario, real quick, because a lot of folks are taking that course online.
Sure.
And, you know, obviously you're a little younger than Aaron and a lot younger than I am. Mm-hmm. So talk about that online and how to get the best out of that for anybody that is interested in looking at taking that course nowadays online.
Yeah, so the fact that we have that program online, I think, is a game changer. You know, it extends the ability just, you know, as a parent, you know, practicality purpose, you know, schedule dependent. To take your kids somewhere for 8 hours, while it's a tradition, it's important. You could do it from home if need be. You could do it on a Tuesday. Just sign up for the course online, and we offer the courses through the Game Commission, through our website, and then also there's a few other, you know, private entities like the NRA that offer that course now that we honor and recognize, as well as some other states as well, if you wanted to hunt in another state. But having that ability to again take that course on your own speed too. Now, I've heard in my own district and talked to other people that there's a concern that, well, if they do this online, they're not going to have the same material taught to them. That's not true. It's the same exact material. Well, okay, if it's the same material, then maybe, you know, the student isn't going to pay attention as much. Now, I will say my experience with the online systems, you can't just click through slides. You can't advance. It's whether through a timing aspect where you have to listen as well as read, or it's interactive. And that's at least my favorite part of it. It is interactive. A screen will pop up and you can move around at your own pace. Everyone learns differently. I learn differently. And it may not be conducive for me to sit into a class, you know, and learn this important information, but I can go, you know, from home, computer, iPad, whatever, sit on my couch and I can explore around. I know some of the stuff on that application opens up, expands deeper information. Well, on my own time, now I can minimize a window and Google something. If I had a question as to, what is a recurve bow? Well, I can Google recurve bow on my own time, you know, and then get back into the course. So I see it as only a positive.
Right, it's changed, and the generation today, that's how they're learning.
Yeah.
I have a daughter that's 22, mm-hmm. and during COVID, she was in college. She's a nurse today, and much of her learning to be a nurse was online. I mean, which is blows my mind, but here we are. So, you know, as I've talked about, it's here. I mean, this is the time of year we all wait for. I mean, the leaves are starting to change. The early mornings, you need a coat, hoodie season. I mean, how can you not love hoodies? I mean, especially when you're 53 and you've eaten too much and you want to cover some your belly a little bit, hoodies are the best. But Aaron, let's just talk about the archery season that's kicking off across the state. I mean, and just the importance. One of the biggest things that happens out there are in accidents are tree stands and tree stand safety. And if you could just touch on tree stand safety for a little.
Yeah. So I think the first and foremost is, you know, when you're picking a tree to hunt out of, right, you want to inspect that tree. You want to make sure there's no deadfalls in that tree, that the tree's not dead itself. And once you make that decision that you're going to start climbing this tree, whether you're hanging a ladder stand, you're using a climber or a hang on or lock on stand, you know, the first and foremost, you need to have a safety harness. And, you know, pretty much with every tree stand that you purchase nowadays is going to come with a safety harness included. And on the market, the private market, they've increased and improved upon the safety of these harnesses like tenfold. You know, there's multiple different brands, different types. You have your traditional safety harness. You just kind of put it on like you would like a coat. I know some companies have expanded to a more of like a rock style, rock climbing style safety harness. You know, because you don't just have your traditional climbing tree stand anymore, right? You have people who use saddles, hunt out of saddles. So there's a lot of different entities involved in this. And making sure that you are tethered to the tree, attached to the tree from the minute you leave the ground until you get to your hunting location and remain so until you climb back down. You know, in my career, I've seen some tree stand accidents that had occur, and every single time they were not wearing a safety harness. Mm-hmm. And something to remember is when you're climbing that tree, again, if you're hanging sticks or you're hanging just using a traditional climber, you know, have your lineman's belt connected and attached. Utilize that. Once you get to your hunting height, whether that's 10 feet, 12 feet, 15 feet, whatever it may be, is, you know, keep that lineman's belt attached until you get your tether attached to the tree. And that's the point where you want to disconnect your lineman's belt and you can begin your hunt.
Cheapest life insurance you can 100% purchase.
Yes. I mean, 100%.
And, you know, with families and everybody wants us coming home that night. And you take a room full of 50 hunters today, there's more people that have horror stories about tree stands than ever, you know. And that's what you hit it best, stay connected from the ground till you're up there. And there's no person out there that's hunting elevated that shouldn't be hooked up. And, you know, if you have any fears, you know, a lot of people think, well, you got to hunt deer from a tree. You don't have to hunt deer from a tree stand. I mean, you'd be just as successful on the ground, in my opinion.
And to kind of expand on that, too, is, you know, me personally, I'll hunt some pretty remote areas. But always have a plan, right? I'll tell my family, my loved ones, you know, I'll use mapping systems. And I'll put exactly where either the tree I'm going to hunt, if it's a preset, or if I'm going to be kind of mobile for the day, I'll give them the general area. Time I'm going to be home. That way, if you don't get home at that time, and they can start making some phone calls.
Right.
So, you know, again, make a plan. Give your loved ones the location where you're going to hunt. Just hopefully they don't tell anybody else.
Well, that's exactly right. You really got to have some trust there some days. Do. You know what I mean? But, you know, that being, I mean, there's so many things we can talk about. Tree stand safety is one. And, you know, as an agency, we run a campaign every year to just try to encourage. If we can help one person avoid an accident, we've done our job. But, you know, talking about deer, too, we have to touch on this. I mean, it's something that, both of your regions, being in both corners, are just starting to see, and that's CWD, chronic wasting disease. And, you know, us as deer hunters, you know, one of our encouragements this year to our sportsmen out there, I mean, you got to face it. Hunters, we're conservationists. The species that we hunt today nationwide are thriving because that's what we're doing. We're conserving for the future. And this disease is ugly. It really is. And it's spreading throughout the state, you know, and no matter where you're at in the state, you always want to have it in the back of your mind. And don't just think about this deer season. Think about how our herd's going to be in 10 years. And as hunters, if we can all take it, you know, 67% of our hunters out there shoot 0 to 1 deer. And, you know, as we saw this June when antlerless licenses went on sale with our general hunt license, people are pretty darn excited yes. about getting a doe tag. And we need you to use it. And it's not like life or death. But what we want to do is try to, one of the reasons is to try to control this disease. And as you guys are both seeing it, you know, in your regions, Mario, if you can just hit on what you're seeing and hearing up there in the Northwest, because it's kind of just knocking on the door up there.
Right, right. It's just starting out now. We have, well, not the newest DMA or disease management area that was put in place this past summer, but we have the second newest up in the Northwest. So I get that even Ohio bordering county, I get that a lot, you know, so other states obviously have, you know, this is for folks that know this is a nationwide disease and to varying levels, you know, in Pennsylvania, we have it for sure, but not as bad as some other states.
Sure.
And vice versa. There's some states that don't, you know, have it hardly at all. But in Ohio, I deal with this a lot with folks just understanding the regulations and understanding the why. Which we could get into a whole podcast just on.
Sure.
You know, that's our job as game wardens is to try to help people understand the why. You know, yeah, I'm telling you to do something, but here's kind of why, you know, we're doing it. And in this case with CWD, the why is and why we want folks to utilize their tags and just get out and hunt more. One, there's that. You know, you're getting out, you're having more opportunity, but then as we teach in hunter education, it's the best way to manage our wildlife is hunting and trapping. So if we want to manage this disease, remove some of the population from the landscape, how best to do it but to fill your freezer at the same time.
Right, and that population will replenish.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, that's the greatest thing mm-hmm. about deer. But, you know, with CWD, we want to make sure, you know, if you're in those areas to get your animal tested. Mm-hmm. You know, our testing time frames has been knocked in half. We're doing it pretty quick, you know, and help us report yep. your harvest and let us know what's going on out there. Because mm-hmm. like you said, I mean, as hunters, we're conservationists and those species that we hunt are thriving today. And we all need to, you know, take it. Anything in your region with, I know it's pretty new bumping into your area as well.
So yeah, it's DMA 8, which was just established with the discovery of two free range deer in the Northern Dauphin County area. Mm-hmm. Now, that DMA expands just north into Northumberland County. It's a very small sliver. But individuals, hunters, non-hunters, wildlife enthusiasts are going to start asking, you know, what's mm-hmm. what's happening. Just like Mario had stated, you know, knowing the regulations, you know, knowing that the high-risk parts, that they can't just be spread across the landscape. And, you know, again, so it's been in DMA 8 is where it's been established where I grew up, right?
Sure.
So now that hits
like
home
almost ground zero.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, and yeah, I did purchase a DMAP DMA tag to go back there and try to help out, try to fill a tag. And that's important is, you know, hunters fill the tags and you can get your deer tested prior to consumption, right? So, but yeah, just knowing the regulations, the high-risk parts is big. Not spreading the high-risk parts mm-hmm. across a landscape, properly disposing of those parts. And there are butcher shops now that are participating with the Game Commission as well as taxidermists that you can take your deer to, right, outside of the DMA.
Right, statewide.
Statewide.
Processors, yep.
Straight to, and those processors, the butcher shops, mm-hmm. they know the protocols to properly dispose of the high-risk parts. But then it would be on the hunter to get that deer tested himself. Right.
Right.
And in the Northeast region down near the border of the Northeast Southeast, we do have some of the bucket or the
head bins.
The head bins. Yep. Yes. Thank you. The head bins stationed up there. So utilizing those. And that was a question I had since, you know, the Northeast region, we haven't had the deal with CWD yet. We are now a little bit. But the timing of getting your test results back. And what I was told, it's fairly quick, like you mentioned. It could be upwards of a week or 2 weeks.
Yeah.
It's for
usually quick. Less. And, you know, at one time it was 3 weeks to four
right,
weeks. And
right.
and with our, you know, cooperation with PennVet and the testing and our wildlife management team, they've knocked it down considerably. But, you know, when you look at a state, and a lot of the reasons that we do what we do is because we still have close to 900,000 hunters.
Yeah.
And we do a pretty darn good job. But like you said, it's managing the resource. And this disease, we all need to not turn a blind eye to it is the bottom line.
And it can be easy to turn a blind eye to it if you don't see it directly. But once you start to see it, I think it can open some eyes. So we're trying to manage that and stop that from happening.
Well, DM8's a great example of what's going on. So two positives within the last year,
yeah.
One along the river, one a little farther in, and they've adjusted that disease management area to take a broad stroke, because the only way to slow it down has been proven in the state of New York, and that is in those areas where they are finding it in the dirt is to get the deer hurt down to manageable levels, and it's important, and yeah. You have less risk of the disease spreading that way, and it's exactly what we're trying to do.
And in combination, again, knowing the regs, making sure those high-risk parts, I can't stress that enough, do not just throw those in the landscape, because they'll be there, and that can help. That's going to spread mm-hmm. this disease.
So guys, like what, I mean, you answer tons of questions out there in the field, and if you had any advice for a sportsman, even somebody maybe that doesn't hunt that had a question about the law, like if they don't read a digest, maybe they don't have their digest, maybe they don't have a cell phone. I mean, today that information is so readily available. Just like I'm a resident in your district, and I had a question. What would you suggest to me as a resident in order to find those answers? How would you contact? Would you contact your regional office, our phone number at dispatch? I mean, I don't actually know that answer, sure. So I'm going to ask you that question.
So it's kind of funny you mentioned that. Actually, one of the first, as I'm doing my introductions at hunter ed classes or other, you know, information or education events, I will actually say what I will give out the central dispatch number, which is an awesome way. In the past, as you well know, that folks had to call into the regional office. There's six regions, plus the Harrisburg office had a different line at one point, I'm sure. So it's much more streamlined now to get a hold of us. I believe there is that or coming through or just in development now. It's the general mail, like through the website. You can ask.
Oh, the GM comments? Yeah,
the comments. Through the I just got my first comment that come through the dashboard on the officer side of things. And I was like, how the heck do they come through into this side of my
technology?
I normally see it through coming through a dispatcher. But what I suggest, folks, is if you have a question, and I don't care, there's no such thing as a stupid question. Real, I mean, I know it's an old saying, it's not mine, trust me, but the only stupid question is one you never asked. And what I tell people is I'd rather you ask me a question now than be standing over a violation, whether that be standing over an animal, because that's kind of my line. When we talk, and we'll talk a little bit later about some things we cite for versus a warning, you know, things like that. If an animal is dead, I can't put that resource back. So I'd much rather you call and ask a question, whether it's about baiting, whether it's about, hey, I have a question. I think I might be trespassing. You know, I'd rather ask you, ask me this question before the season, then we get into the season, and now I have less options. I may have to do my job. Whereas beforehand, I could talk to you a little bit about it. And even if it's, I don't care if it's about animal identification. I've had those calls too. Mm-hmm. Here's a picture of this duck. What kind of duck is it? Well, it's a farm duck. You know, it's not a wild species. So that's cool. And you asked how to get folks to us is call the 1-833 PGC Hunt or PGC Wild.
We made it easy.
You made it easy, and I kind of market it as Wildlife 911.
Right.
You call this number, you're going to talk to someone 24/7, 365. Gone are the days of, it's 4 or 5 o'clock. I might not get a hold of anyone on a Friday until Monday. So no, you're going to get a hold of a dispatcher and they'll prioritize whatever the public calls in about, and depending on the prioritization of it, it may go to a game warden right there. Whether
nice.
Through our call out procedure or whatnot, you will get a response at some point.
Right. Again, if the number again is 833 PGC Hunt mm-hmm. or 833 PGC Wild, and somebody is going to answer the yep. phone. And that's one of the advances we've made with technology and the agency. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like you said, we want those questions because yep. we want you to do the right thing.
Yep.
And, you know, some days we get confused. I mean, we said it earlier, nobody's perfect. I mean, we do the best job that we can possibly do. So here in a couple of weeks, a lot of people, we start hearing a lot of gunshots right now. I mean, archery season's in. We see, yeah. People getting those rifles ready,
right.
As we get into bear season and deer season. And, one of the things I wanted to touch on today is kind of a tradition here in the state is driving, and especially in the bear season. And I just wanted to hit a little bit on the safety on those drives and what hunters should really have in the back of their mind. I mean, yeah, we all want to get out there and you know, everybody wants, you said something earlier about you can't bring that animal back to life. One of my favorite sayings, and it just struck me, and you'll see when you get as many birthdays as I do, you can't remember everything, but, you know, one of my mentors in turkey hunting, a turkey calling, a guy named Ben Rogers Lee. He's an old timer from South Alabama. And he'd shoot a deer and he'd say, man, nothing more I'd like than to go down there and breathe life back into that deer and have that hunt all over again. Yeah. And as I'm getting older, I feel that every time that I'm lucky enough to pull the trigger or release an arrow. But let's hit on those drives and some of the safety. And I'll kick it over your way first, Aaron.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's interesting you speak about drives because not every state you can do that activity, right? In Pennsylvania, we can. It's a tradition.
It's legal.
It's legal. Right. We have statistics that it's not causing, you know, any more HRSIs than typical. But, you know, again, I stress on having plans, right? I like to plan things. And, you know, whether you're driving with five guys or you have 10 guys, know where your drivers and your standers are going to be at all times. You know, make sure you're wearing the proper amount of fluorescent orange. Make sure it's visible. Have a way of communication, whether it's a cell phone. If somebody will get injured, that you know where the other hunters are. And plan to know, you know, who's going to be a shooter, who's going to be a driver or a stander and a driver. And knowing where those hunters are coming from, the direction they're coming from. And again, wearing the fluorescent orange is huge. Because once we get to that time of year, I mean, you can see fluorescent orange for hundreds of yards in the woods, right? So knowing where that's at and knowing where your shooting lanes are. And that's also, you know, knowing your target, right? And what lies beyond your target. You know, like you stated earlier, you know, once you kill an animal, you're not going to bring that animal back, right? Once you squeeze that trigger and you shoot that round off, you're not bringing that round
back. That's a great point.
So knowing exactly what your target is, what lies beyond your target, and we're all hunters. We all sometimes get that tunnel vision. We got to fight that tunnel vision and know exactly what you're aiming at.
And behind it.
Exactly.
Yep. And that's a great point. And don't fall to that peer pressure or that adrenaline punch. You know, we all want to come back there tomorrow with everybody that we started with. And do you have any advice for anybody out there on drives? And I'm going to come back to the orange thing right after this too, because it's real important we hit that again.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely having a plan in place, you know, pre-planning your route. I would say I see it all the time. You know, folks, they get to an area, whether it's public lands, state game lands, state forest, and they just go, well, they haven't looked at the topography. And half the group is going, you know, because it's flat enough where they can, you know, still move together. Well, then the other half just hit a ravine or some type of elevation. And now their group split off, which is a safety issue. One, because of the line of sight, you know, depending on how the game moves, you know, where is that hunter going to shoot at in relation to the rest of their party, whom now may be either behind, forward of them, whatever. I would say that's the one I see the most that I try to talk to folks. Just look at a map. Onyx, which is an awesome service, will show. And a lot of these mapping, you know, apps that are on the phones, they will show topography.
Sure.
Just kind of do a little bit of what I call, you know, cell phone reconnaissance before. I mean, it doesn't have to be weeks before. Just look at where you're going and plan your route that way.
And if you're hunting on state game lands, and if you don't, let's say you don't have a cell phone or Onyx, you can come to one of our offices, regional offices, and get a map of the area that you want to hunt, and it shows you everything you need to know. And
absolutely,
you know, we're so fortunate in this state to have the amount of public land, the land that we own as the agency, that, you know, almost 1.6 million acres, and the other however many million acres of state forest and Allegheny National Forest. And there's just tons of, there's no excuse not to have a place.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, we've got some new game lands that are coming on board right now. And I'm not going to say where it's at, but we're going to fill a county that doesn't have a game lands. And
it's exciting.
It's in the southeast part of the state, and it's where most of the people live. So that's a little hint, but that's to become, and it is exciting.
It's exciting.
Yeah. It is. So just, you know, before we go back to the orange, you know, is there any laws or regs on how many people can be in a big game drive?
There is. So to hunt big game in a party, it's going to be 25 hunters.
Okay.
25 is the maximum that you can have hunting together at that location.
Okay. That's good to know. You know, I remember when I started hunting, I don't want to confuse anybody, you had to have a roster as well. I don't think that's in place anymore.
No.
Yeah. You had to have your license and hang them up on camp. And it was kind of that tradition I remember as a kid, but going back to Orange, so I would imagine one of the biggest warnings or citations or things that you catch out there is not meeting those Orange requirements. I'm going to be honest with you. I watch this all the time, even with my own family, my dad. Like, he has this Orange that's just barely legal, and he thinks that the deer aren't going to see him because he has that on. Well, let me tell you something. There's a whole lot of people out there in orange suits that deer walk right up to. You know, obviously we're lucky deer are colorblind. Turkeys, they can see all colors. And even turkeys will walk up to you until you make a sound or move and they're gone. But let's talk about that orange requirement. 250 on big game, 360 head and
correct
chest and back.
So 250 square inches, speaking of deer hunting or bear hunting or big game hunting, 250 square inches of daylight fluorescent orange, right? It has to be that fluorescent orange. It can't be that dull. You know, I've been wearing this vest for 20 years, and I see that. Right?
Sure you do.
You can tell a difference. Invisible head, chest, and back combined in a 360 degrees. And that's is for the safety of the hunter.
100%. Everybody. Yes. Yeah, 100%.
Even non-hunters who are going to be enjoying Penn's Woods in the fall, you know, I recommend, you know, putting that orange on. And if you're utilizing game lands past a certain, between the certain dates, you still need to utilize that 250 square right. inches of orange. And that's, it's not a fashion statement, right? It's safety. That's what can be seen. The leaves start falling off the trees. You're going to see that. You're going to see that movement. And again, public safety, whether you're hunting, not hunting, and just enjoying the woods, that's where it's paramount.
Sure. And, you know, let's, one thing we hear a lot, I mean, it's a question I have too, and I'll flip it to you, Mario, is most of us carry some kind of pack, backpack. So we've got our orange vest on, we got our hat on. Mm-hmm. Throw our backpack on, and we cover up the orange on the back. Just any little recommendations there?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, this question just came up in one of my hunter education classes this past weekend, was on wearing a backpack, but also altering. You talked about, you know, the animals seeing that orange. Someone had a question about altering their fluorescent orange vest to have a more camouflage pattern to it. So the long and short of it is that 250 square inches is a minimum. That on head, chest, and back, visible in a 360 degrees. So if you throw a backpack on, and you may have that vest on your chest and back, the vest is on, then you put that backpack on, you've now taken away from that minimum requirement, and you've also obscured my view of your back. So you've created, if you're walking away from me as the hunter, I can't see you, maybe near as clear as if you had that backpack removed. Suggestion would be to find an old vest, buy a cheap one, cut it in a way that you could put a panel, attach it with safety pins. That's fine. Use some orange. They make all types of duct tape and various types of marking tape.
Something just to, yeah,
just
absolutely.
Something to, because again, like Aaron said, this is for safety. This is for human beings, me and you. This is not for the animal. There's other laws and regulations that go into for the animal. This is for the hunter. So showing yourself a little bit. So I put that. And then the other thing that with the altar, you see that a lot. And I had that question here recently. Well, I took a Sharpie and I started marking some camouflage patterns, this and that. And I said, well, every mark you made took away from that 250. You were already at that minimum. Now you're taking away.
Right.
So, you know, if you want to wear camouflage, they do make orange camouflage. And we have law and regulation that allow that, you know, as long as you meet that 250 square inch minimum. And they do market all types of stuff. But if you want to alter anything, just leave the vest and the hat that folks typically wear. Leave that alone. You can play with the camouflage on the rest of your clothing all you want.
We think about whitetails here in Pennsylvania and how many giant trophy class mm-hmm. smart old bucks and even smarter mamas, even smarter does have walked right up to a hunter in a full-blown orange head-to-toe suit and not known they were there.
I harvested many a deer.
Yeah, if you don't move, you're not going to scare mm-hmm. them, or if they don't smell you. I mean, it's just the bottom line. That Sharpie marker, you're just helping yourself. I mean, in all honesty, I mean, I don't want to get in an argument with anybody, but that's all we're doing. So another one that we know here before, and then I'm going to ask you guys to talk about anything that you can advise our hunters on, but I'm going to kick this back over to you, Mario, is loaded weapons in vehicles. And I'm sure you come across that because when we went over to your bureau and asked what are some of the top things that we write citations for, and I don't know how that happens, but that's one of them.
Yeah, in our area, loaded firearms in a vehicle is a big one. So a loaded firearm in a vehicle is going to be loaded, and our definition of loaded is having a round either in the magazine or chamber of a firearm. So that's one that, you know, I say this is a loaded firearm, and the hunter, the subject of the investigation is like, what are you talking about? The chamber's empty. Well, there is a loaded magazine inside of that weapon that is a loaded firearm. Okay, so that's just a little clarification on the way our law is written. Mm-hmm. Really, it should speak to itself, but we can talk about it. Having a loaded firearm in a vehicle outside of a concealed carry situation, and that's where that's the difference and the one exception we have. If you have, you know, concealed carry pistol or whatever, you can have that weapon with your correct concealed carry credentials here in Pennsylvania. Outside of that, there realistically should be no reason to have a loaded firearm in the vehicle. One, you know, how can you ensure that firearm won't go off at the wrong time? You hit a bump. Maybe you don't engage the safety. I had dealt with a situation where someone had that firearm loaded. They got to a parking lot. As they were pulling it out, it went off. In their brand new truck, they shot out their window. The worst part of that was in a hotel parking lot next to a Walmart.
Oh, wow. I know a guy in Florida, mm-hmm. that was reaching for his binoculars and got hung up there somehow, and the gun was off safety and blew a hole in the transmission of a brand new truck. I mean, the safety issue is the biggest thing. So let's talk about this part of it. What if I have my gun loaded and I lean it against, I'm eating lunch and I lean my shotgun rifle mm-hmm. against the tire of my truck, but it's still loaded.
Right. So we teach that in hunter education, but you know, it again comes from a place of practical safety. So our definition is in, on, or against a loaded firearm, in, on, or against a vehicle or motorized conveyance is some of our language. So leaning it against the tire, could that not slip off? That slips off and hits the ground, you never know. Well, you should know the condition of your weapon. But if it's a hand-me-down like we've all grown up with, you know, grandfather's gun, is there a drop safety in it like there is nowadays in current manufacturing weapons? Did you take care of it over the years? If that drops, can you guarantee that firearm's not going to go off? And really, none of us can. It's a piece of mechanics at the end of the day. You cannot guarantee that is not going to discharge. The best way to guarantee it is just unload it.
Right. So, go ahead. I'm cut you off.
Sorry.
Oh
no, you're fine.
So let's talk about muzzle loaders in that arena of loaded, both flintlock and inline.
Right. So the muzzle loader, you know, you can have the ball in the barrel, right? But you need to have the flint out of the firearm.
Either the powder,
yes,
you have to have the ignition system out of it.
The ignition system has to be removed,
right? Or primer in an inline.
Because again, like Mario stated, you know, it's not a matter of if; it's a matter of when it happens,
right?
You know, in the Northeast, you know, we had a fatal HRSI a few years ago from a load of firearm in the vehicle that inadvertently went off, and you know, it could easily be avoided by just unloading that firearm. You know, whether it's a shotgun, a .22, a rifle, what have you. You know, that's crucial.
So, and one more caveat to that, and then we're going to move on. Crossbow.
Sure.
What if I'm hunting and I bring my crossbow back to the vehicle and I don't have it uncocked or don't have something to shoot it? What's the law?
Just take the bolt or arrow out, you know, so you can leave that crossbow cocked. Just take the bolt out.
Right. And you can lean it against the tire, put it in the truck, whatever. It's not loaded.
Absolutely.
It's just cocked. Beautiful. So before we get away from this, any advice that you guys have, safety, when you're out in the field, whatever, to our sportsmen, our hunters, to our folks out there? I mean, we are in charge of 400 and responsible for over 480 species of wildlife out there. And there's a lot of things that sometimes we just don't think about, just maybe citations that you see or safety issues that you see that people really should take and put it in their memory bank.
Yeah, so, I mean, not speaking on the citation aspect of things, but again, you know, so I'm a pretty big hunter myself, right? And something that...
We couldn't tell it.
Something you can easily overlook is, you know, like you mentioned earlier, we all have a pack with us usually, right? Having a med kit in that pack, right? That you can buy a med kit that's already put together for you, or you can go to your local drugstore, CVS, Walgreens, what have you, and you can kind of cherry pick what you're going to need, right? And you don't need, like, top-of-the-line, full trauma kit. But having options, right? Because I'm a bow hunter, and I've sliced my fingers on broadheads, right? So having something to control the bleeding.
You stitch yourself up?
Of course. Something, yeah.
Control, you're a badass. I knew that.
control the bleeding. And yeah, I mean, some guys will carry some sort of trauma device that, you know, if someone comes across a gunshot victim, you know, HRSI, they can kind of help control the bleeding, so on and so forth. But having an avenue to treat yourself, you know, is going to be great.
It wasn't too many years ago that one of our own folks here that works in the agency that spends his lifetime in the woods was gutting a deer. 3 miles from a vehicle on a game lands, there was a bunch of guys. They were doing some organized deer drives and stuck a, you know, Havilon knife right into his thigh, 3 miles from the truck. And one of your fellow officers was there and had sutures and wanted to stitch him and didn't want to stitch, but they had a tourniquet, which helped with saved his life because he was bleeding to death, you know, 3 miles back. That's a great, great tip to anybody.
And you can put together a great med kit on the cheap. It doesn't have to be a top of the line, but having choices,
sure,
you know, to save your life, to save your hunting partner's life,
and just doing some research, even, you know, a quick Google search can teach you some life-saving stuff that you just need to know. In the event of a you come across something like that, great stuff.
Yep. Something else to bring outside of, you know, like medical equipment would be food, water. Irregardless of where you hunt, you never know. And as we know, as game wardens, you know, our days, I can tell you when I'm going to start every day, but can I tell you every day when I'm going to finish my shift? So we always have some type of snack, some type of, you know, depending on ourselves. Our hunters, just the same. Even if you're hunting a smaller chunk of woods, it may be woods you know, woods you've already done the plan for, your hunting plan. But if something happens, inclement weather, a fall, you get injured in some way where it's going to take you a little while to get out of the woods, having an ability, especially an older hunter with maybe diabetes, having an ability to give yourself a little bit of food, a little bit of water, whether it's a granola bar, a protein bar, and a bottle of water. It doesn't matter if you're planning on hunting for a couple hours, just having that, because things, you know, when things can go wrong, they will. And you just want to, just by having that medical kit, even though you may never use it, you may never eat that granola bar, and I hope it goes bad in your hunting pack, but the time you need it is the time you won't have.
Good old Snickers can cure a lot of things. Absolutely. So I know what I'm not going to ask him this question because I probably know the answer. Mm-hmm. So as a Pittsburgh native, Pittsburgh-ish native,
sure.
What would be your favorite hunting snack or lunch if you're going to hunt all day?
Oh, nowadays would be probably a protein bar.
Bologna sandwich, right?
Bologna sandwich.
Yeah.
Sweet Lebanon.
Yes, sir. I knew that was coming. We actually, in our bureau, once in a while, we have bologna sandwich day because it's just, that's what it is. You might put a couple Middlesworth chips on it and make it crunchy version.
That's a delicacy. Yeah.
I mean, I hear you on the protein bar too. I mean,
ham salad, really.
Ham salad. Yep, that's the Pittsburgh. Peanut butter and jelly is a hard one to beat too. I mean, it really is. But let's look at wrapping it up. Any other advice or stuff that you have for our folks out there? And let me before we wrap it up. I mean, I wanted to ask this question. They're over there yelling at me because we're going over time, but I'm a hunter. I'm walking out. I see a game warden coming out there. What, you get approached many different ways. I mean, y'all put your pants on just like everybody else. What's the best way for a hunter to approach a game warden? Or,
well, let me just say, you know, we're not robots, right? So I know Mario, myself, and I can probably speak to every game warden in Pennsylvania. We took this job because we love hunting, we love trapping, we love the outdoors, and we love the culture of hunting, right? So, you know, we're not going to be robots walking up to you. But if you happen to see us, you know, a lot of times we're dressed like we're dressed, like in this green with this vest on, you know, just
very sporty outfits.
Right.
I mean, not noticeable whatsoever.
We will be, you know, once we get to the firearm season, the bear season, you're going to see us in that fluorescent orange.
Sure.
But just knowing that, you know, knowing where your muzzle is pointed at all times. And I don't want to dive down the rabbit hole, but I've checked hunters where they might get a little nervous around us. And that's why I say, you know, like you mentioned, you know, we put our pants on the same way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're human beings. You know where that muzzle's pointed at all times, because, you know, I want to go home just like you want to go home after your hunt. And I've checked hunters where the muzzle has been pointed towards my head, towards my chest. And I have to be aware, you know, to kind of grab that muzzle to stop that from happening. So just be aware of where your muzzle's pointed. You know, a lot of times we'll offer direction. We're going to say who we are, you know, small talk, how you doing? And we'll give direction on, you know, please, you know, unload your rifle, or can you turn around and point your rifle in this direction, just for my safety and everyone involved. Yeah. And again, just know that, you know, we do have a job to do, but we are fair, and we want to see successful hunters. We want to see safe hunting. And ultimately, you know, we all have the same goal in mind, right? A good, healthy population of both huntable and non-huntable species in the country. Commonwealth.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome advice. You know, and I come from the generation still when a police officer is behind me on the interstate, I get a little bit nervous and tense, and right. There is some intimidation factor with a lot of people. But again, your people, I mean, we're just doing you're just doing your job every day. And we're very lucky to have you all out there, because it's not an easy job. And we didn't even hit on, you know, a quarter of what y'all do every day. But do you have any advice for sportsmen out there?
Yeah, I would even say if you see a game warden coming up to you, or you're walking back into your vehicle and the game warden standing in the parking lot, don't be nervous, because there may not be anything. There may be no other reason that we're contacting you than just to do what we call an administrative inspection. Different than, like you said, you're driving down the road, see a state trooper, get a little nervous. So, you know, the police officers aren't stopping you just to say, oh, do you have all this? There's usually a reason a police officer is pulling you over. You have violated the law in such a way. As game wardens, the way our game law is written, so hunting is it's a privilege. It's something that it's a regulated activity. So us coming to you and saying, can I see your license, you know, and then going through the full license check, may just be because that's what we are doing, which is our job.
Sure.
And, because I get that all the time. Well, what's the violation? You're hunting. It's no violation. I'm just checking your license, getting to know you, you know, and relax a little bit.
We can be friends.
Exactly.
We might have to talk again sometime.
We work alone a lot, so having a conversation too.
I live vicariously through the hunter, you know.
Sure.
Do we get to hunt a lot? Absolutely. Do we get a lot of season openers? No. Do we get a lot of prime time hunting? Not really. Especially when you're young and you want to get out more as a game warden, and you want to be out when most of the hunters are out. But I'm living vicariously through our hunters. So when I stop and talk to you and ask you about that hunt, I'm not digging to find a violation. If there's a violation, one's gonna present itself. But I want to see, you know, was this your first deer you shot? Like a conversation I had this past turkey season, that was her first turkey. This young lady that I checked her license, and she was with her brother. That was really cool.
Gives me goosebumps.
Yeah,
I love that stuff.
Yeah. I mean, it was I'll show you the picture. It was a monster.
Nice.
Yeah.
Don't mark those spots on X though, right?
Yeah.
No, I'm teasing.
That's where the turkey was.
Well, there is this whole world's built on networking and relationships, and that's what you are. You're our folks in the field. I mean, you're the PR person, because a lot of times you're by yourself. You're doing events. You're our safety folks out there. There's a lot of stuff that goes behind that badge. And gentlemen, thank you for coming and sharing our day with us today. And looking forward to the future of the Game Commission and your futures. I mean, obviously, I'm a little more tenured here than you, but I'm a lot older, so I'll be going a lot. But our biggest thing we can do is look for the future, and that's our biggest goals. But thank you for what you do each and every day, and we're so lucky to have you as part of the Pennsylvania Game Commission.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely.